This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 141, recorded live August the 2nd, 2016. Today, CJ and I are going to review some of the listener survey results that we've had from multiple listeners of the podcast. Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Microsoft Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, and the competitive landscape and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Andrew Connell.
And I'm Chris Johnson.
Send us a tweet either to the show at MS Cloud Show or to Andrew at Andrew Connell.
Or Chris at LoungeFlyZ.
As we'd love to connect with you. We're just two dudes telling you how we see it. The Microsoft Cloud Show is sponsored by Valid NL. Valid is a Microsoft Gold partner whose mission is to enable its customers to excel in their business through the innovative use of technology. Valid is always on the lookout for consultants, architects, and engineers. Do you know Azure, Business Intelligence and Analytics, .NET, Office 365, or SharePoint? Look them up on valid.nl. Good morning, CJ. How are you?
Very well. And you?
I'm doing just fine. What's going on in your neck of the woods?
I'm back from a little bit of camping in the San Juan Islands with the family this weekend, which was a lot of fun. Get out and get into nature, all that sort of stuff. Yeah, it was pretty decent, actually. Nice, but now I'm back in grey-looking Seattle, strangely enough, which is very conducive to getting work done, of course. How about you?
I'm sitting here in relatively grey Florida. Same deal. It's a little wet this morning, but it's good. Just same old, just plugging away, getting work done. And I guess this is the last week before the kids head back to school. So I think next week is when I actually get to start doing real work again and not having spurts of work throughout the summer going on.
Yeah, gotcha. So. Yeah, I think I could start a little later than yours, but I think my wife is looking forward to that.
Yeah. You have the benefit of being able to get out of the house and working from home.
That's true. I love it.
I wouldn't trade it, but it's
can be distracting.
Yeah, it can be distracting. It's just that once you get towards the end of the summer, they start to get a little stir crazy. My son isn't here right now. He's been at camp for the last week and a half. He gets home later this week, but it's kind of like, let's get back to our school routine and all that kind of jazz. So,
oh yeah, for sure.
Any that kind of stuff. So
excellent.
Hey, today we got two things we're going to do here. So today we got a little bit of news, more like a little bit of announcements that we'll kind of throw out there. And, then we wanted to spend some time going through the results from our listener survey that we had for the podcast, which we had some really good responses from a great number of our listeners. And so it was really curious to see what people were saying. And this is a continuation actually of a previous episode, because you and I did actually record this a couple weeks ago when I happened to be in Seattle, and then we lost the recording. It was supposed to be episode 140, and we ended up screwing that up. So it's episode 141, and we're going to do it again, but we have updated numbers now.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. Whoops.
Yeah, exactly. My bad.
But take two will be better than take one anyway, so.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, I'll throw just a couple little Azure announcements that I've seen come out in the last few days. We had a couple GA announcements. So Azure AD B2C is now generally available. B2C is a highly available global identity management service for consumer-facing applications that can scale to hundreds of millions of identities. There's the Azure Security Center. That went generally available.
Mm-hmm.
That's to where it helps you take control of your cloud security policies, monitor the current security of your Azure resources, and detect and respond to active attacks. And then finally, the Azure Service Bus Premium tier has gone GA. So that's supported with a 99.9% SLA, and it offers high reliability and throughput, including message sizes up to 1 megabyte.
Ooh, interesting.
That's available in 7 of the different regions: Southeast Asia, East Asia, West Europe, North Europe, Central US, West US, and East US.
Nice. More super speedy service bus for you.
Absolutely. And I guess we got a little bit of news here. We have in the Azure space, it's kind of timely with what's going on. Do you want to share that with us? A little bit of Olympic stuff here that we got, I think.
Oh yeah, the Sorry, you caught me off guard there for a second. I was like, "What? What are you talking about?"
I noticed that. I saw that from the video. We do a video stream when we're recording this. And I saw that. So I was like, "Oh, let me just throw Olympics in there and see if it."
Yeah, nice. So yeah, there was news out recently that NBC are making available 4,500 hours of streaming video available from the Olympics, or during the Olympics, or after the Olympics. I can't tell which, whether it's during or after. Anyway. And they're serving it off the Azure, right? So from, I'm imagining, from some Azure storage, but also from streaming services, and sending it out to, their web properties and mobile properties and all that sort of stuff from Azure, and taking advantage of media services that are available up in there.
This is the second time they've done it. They did it for the Sochi Olympics, and I believe it is with live and on-demand platform streaming coverage. It's funny because there's a line in the statement that Microsoft released. It said, quote, NBC Olympics is making it easy for viewers to access news, highlights, and programming wherever they are via NBC Sports app that's available for free on Android, iOS, Roku, Amazon, Windows 10 tablets, Xbox, Windows Phone, PC, and Mac. So the only thing I didn't see there was like maybe your connected car or maybe your smartwatch or something. I mean, they're pretty much, it's available everywhere.
I'm offended that my toaster can't get the ladies' badminton finals.
You know, it's funny. I saw somebody posted an image today on Reddit, and it said, with all the news from the outdoor water sports for the health concerns and stuff, they said maybe this should be the Olympic logo, and the three rings in the middle were actually the biohazard.
Oh, that's harsh.
It really is. It's sad, though, to see the news that's going on there. But
yeah, it's hard to know, like, I don't know. My view of the media is pretty rough right now, and it's hard to know about whether it's being all overblown or not, or like actually what the conditions are really like. But I hope the athletes are all right.
Yeah, I do too. I do too. Okay, so you want to dive into our, that's a bit of my news. Did you have any other news you wanted to share?
No, that was good. Okay. That was excellent. Nice little bit of news to start the show.
That'll work. Okay, let's do our survey. So talk a little bit about the survey results here. And there are a few things that CJ and I are going to want to, we want to share with you what people said first. And then we have some stuff that we want to talk about, because there are a few things that did kind of come up late in the, they come up towards the end that we want to get your input on. I mean, you've already given us some input, but we wanted to get your input on. So we asked everybody really for four multiple choice questions. We asked them four multiple choice questions. Then we kind of gave them like a free form spot and said, put in anything that you want there. What do you like? What do you dislike? What do you want more of? Et cetera. And it kind of builds off the multiple choice questions that we had. But what we did is we sent this out to our mailing list, to everybody who signed up to our newsletter. And the people that signed up to it, a few days later, they got another email that prompted them to fill out a listener survey. This is something that we're going to do periodically to kind of just get a bead on who the listeners are, who our listeners are for the show. It helps make sure that we are, honestly, it helps it to where CJ and I can feel more connected with who our listeners are, because, I mean, we're not going to, I don't want to say that we would pander to whatever everybody wants, but we're doing this part because it's we enjoy it, but we also talk about things that are interesting to us. But if it's just stuff that's interesting to us too, it's kind of, we don't need to go through the process of having to have a podcast. We could just get on the phone and we can chat. So it's nice to see that people are interested in the same kind of things that we talk about, and to get some engaging feedback from listeners. So
yeah,
what we're going to do here is we're going to go through the questions first, and then we'll talk about some of the different responses, the freeform responses we got. We had a total of over 120 responses, and of those 120 that we got back, almost, I'd say about 75 to 80 left us freeform comments, and that's excluding the comments that people just said, great show, love the show, or something like that, or I don't like the show, or something like that. You know what?
Yeah.
It's stuff that people, you know, took the time to write two or three sentences. So the first question, this is one of the ones I was really interested in, which is, what describes your role at work? And we broke it down into four different options. We did have one person kind of come back to us and said they really hate this because we felt that we left database administrator off the list there. But I agree with what they're saying. I understand that. They said they hate the fact that Microsoft always, you know, leaves that off, because it's kind of like, where do I fit in the whole thing? But I think that the four categories we used, we're trying to be really general with them.
Yeah.
And you could select more than one. So that's, I mean, for me, a DBA can fall either into a developer or an IT pro. kind of role. It really depends on what kind of work you do with the DB, with the databases. Are you making sure that they're performant and uptime and all that kind of stuff and optimized, or are you doing like, you know, creation of tables and that's a little more dev-y kind of stuff? I don't know.
Yeah.
So here are the four options we had. We had developer, IT pro slash administrator, manager, and then user, which is kind of like information worker slash non-technical. So
gotcha.
Again, these numbers are going to come out to being more than 300%. Oh, sorry, more than 100%. 300%, wow.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, it's the OSX CPU monitor.
I'm glad that bugs you as much as I do.
Oh, yeah. My God, yeah. For those of you not on OSX, the process monitor on OSX, it shows you a percentage based on the number of cores. So because it's a quad-core machine, you can have up to 400% of your machine getting used. So you can see something similar with like Task Manager on Windows, but the first time you see it when you switch over to from Windows, you're like, what the hell?
What the hell? Yeah. That's pretty confusing.
My laptop has a turbo button somewhere.
So we had 1,000% of IT pros respond. Is that
exactly
where
you're
going with this?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay.
Gotcha. So we had 59% identified themselves with developer and 48% identified themselves as IT pro. So pretty good even split there. I expected the high number on developer. I didn't expect the number to be as high with IT pro. I think that episode with probably Todd Clint helped us really get in a lot of IT pros, which...
yeah, for sure.
Also some comedians, probably. We also had 28% identified themselves as a manager. That one surprised me. And 5% identified themselves as being a user. So 59% developer, 48% IT pro, 28% manager, and 5% user.
Gotcha.
What do you think about that?
I honestly thought dev would have been a bit higher, I guess, 60% and 48% for IT pro, 59% for developer, sorry. Yeah, I thought we were going to be dev heavy. Like, I understand that because we talk a lot about development topics and things like that. Yeah, I'm kind of a little surprised that IT pro is so high, 50% roughly, 48%. Yeah, that surprised me a little bit. I guess that's, but you know, the other thing here is that people are identifying with multiple roles, obviously.
Mm.
So there are some people that do a bit of IT pro, a bit of development. And so maybe it's not so surprising, I guess. Yeah, I just thought it would be slightly less IT pro, a bit more developer.
I wonder if that has anything to do with the fact that as business moves more to the cloud, IT pros are doing more management and more implementation and configuration and being more, I'm going to come up with a word here that I hope this doesn't get coined, but like a cloud master, to where they're more like being more familiar, more, instead of going through and babies and having to work with servers and physical boxes as much, that you're working more on like the networking, the virtual networking and stuff like that, that's all inside the public clouds.
Possible. Yeah, possible.
Mm.
I guess their roles may be changing as well. And not so much about plugging in servers and managing hardware and more about managing infrastructure from a software level and networking and hybrid sort of side of things.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So the next one was, why did you subscribe to the podcast? And this is kind of an interesting one. I'll just run through the percentages and categories. So 93% said to get the latest Microsoft cloud news. 84% said awareness in new things. 68% said stay up to date on competitive landscape. 68% said feature deep dives, learn more about features you aren't familiar with. 57% said interviews. 55% said entertainment. CJ and AC are a riot. I'm glad somebody thinks we're funny. 37% said stay up to date on what AC and CJ are up to, which I thought was kind of interesting.
Yeah, I was surprised.
Maybe we should do some more Dear Diary episodes. And 9% said other. So I guess that was, so the top one was get latest cloud news. I don't think that's a surprise, right? We try to do episodes every once in a while, at least every second or third episode, at least that many, with some cloud news and making sure that we're able to keep people up to date on what's going on in the Microsoft cloud world. And we understand that people have tuned in for that. I think the interesting one for me was 68% stay up to date on the competitive landscape. For me, this is really interesting because, you know, I work day to day in the Microsoft world, as many of us do. And I guess people come to us and are looking for not just the cloud news about Microsoft, but also, you know, what Google and Amazon are up to and things like that as it relates to the cloud. So that was really good to know that there are 68% of people that tune in for that sort of stuff.
Mm.
55% entertainment. CJ and AC are a riot. I mean, I'm very glad people think this, of course, and get a bit of a kick out of it, but I don't think we're that funny, to be fair.
I don't either. I was laughing more with our people that we interview, too, less so than us.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. We're very lucky that we've had some really great interviews, very knowledgeable folks, far more so than we are, and I'm glad we can interject a bit of humor along the way. That's nice, too.
Absolutely. Yeah, I thought the one about getting up to date with the latest cloud news, 93%. I'm surprised that the number was so high at 93%, but I guess that's a good thing considering that's our tagline. Because that was the main goal of the show, and awareness of new things. That's a pretty good mix there. It seems to me, based on the numbers that we've seen, that people like what we're doing with the show. They're not asking for anything to really be different. They just kind of want to just keep it going from that whole bit.
Yeah. So. Yeah, exactly. No, that was really good. I don't think there were any major mega surprises there, but really glad for people to reinforce that they come to us for the news and that we should make sure we continue to do that, obviously.
Absolutely. So the third question that we asked everyone was, how do you listen to the episodes? And this is one big that we had some theories on this, and we actually made some changes to some process that we were doing because it's good to know that our theory was apparently spot on. If you notice, we did things like we moved our show notes and the links of stuff that we talk about. We originally had that being posted on our site, and then we took those off and started putting them just in Flipboard, and then we switched from there and put them back on the site, and we put them in the body of the actual episodes that show up in your podcast apps on your phones or whatever you use to listen to it. So we asked them, how do you listen to the different episodes? So 83% said they do it while they're commuting. So driving, commuting, on the train, on the way to work, on the way home. Regardless, 83% said that's how they're listening to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
21% said while working, and 19% said exercising. So that's pretty close to how I consume podcasts. Mostly when I'm driving. Also, when I'm exercising or running, I like to listen to podcasts because I find that that's where I'm doing like yard work, because I find that it really helps me disconnect from what I'm doing and not overthink what I'm doing. The other thing too, the part about working, I have always found it fascinating that 21% of people said they listen to it while working. That's fascinating to me because when I try and listen to something like a podcast while I'm working, I always miss it. I always just completely disconnect from that. I either have to stop working and focus on what I'm listening to, or I go back to working and then I totally miss out on what they just said on the podcast.
Yeah, I'm not very good at trying to concentrate on somebody talking while working as well. I definitely consume most of my shows in the car, or mowing the lawn is another good one for me. Listen to podcasts doing that around the house, things like that. But for the most part, it's commuting. So I think it was good. It means that we should keep an eye on designing our podcast to be consumed in a reasonable sort of commute time chunk.
Mm. That's one question we probably could have asked, do we have the right length? We try and shoot for 40, 50-ish kind of minutes. Sometimes we go way over, sometimes we go way under, but I wonder if that works for people. That's a good length for me. It's a comfortable one for what we have on the show, but I wonder if people would think they'd want more like a 25-minute or a 30-minute episode or something.
Yeah, weirdly, when we started the show a couple of years back, we sort of had a goal, or we started off at least with a goal of keeping our shows to 30 minutes or less. And we sort of got a bit longer and a bit longer and a bit longer. But it would be great to hear feedback on that. If people would like shorter shows or about the same period of time, let us know either on Twitter or send us a note. Because, for me, my commute is half an hour or less. And so I love podcasts that I can listen to the whole thing in one shot.
I think I'm already thinking of a few questions I'd like to ask on another survey, which we'd encourage you that if you want to do one of the surveys with us, please make sure you're signed up for our mailing list. We don't send a ton of email out. I have a couple emails that we send out when we have a guest coming up to ask questions, if you're interested in submitting any questions. But the length of the show is definitely one that I'd be curious of. I'm curious too. We'll get into this a little bit in the comment section, but we ask people why they subscribe to the podcast. As you'll see, we got a lot of questions about people asking for specific things like more developer type content. And I know you and I have talked about doing a second show, and maybe we make this show just the news show, like exactly what it is, Microsoft Cloud News, and it just covers just news stuff, but not so much. And maybe like some, you know, new features and stuff like that. But we punt any kind of like developerish kind of stuff over to a different show. I don't know. I'm curious what people would think about that.
Yeah. But, yeah.
Hey, we'll probably send out another survey in a couple months and see where people are with that.
Yeah, exactly.
So we have one more question, I think.
Yes. Interested in a live episode. So this one was, we were asking people about, would you be interested in listening to a live recording, I guess, and tuning in as we record a show and maybe interacting over Periscope or Twitter or what have you, and doing a bit of back and forth that way as we recorded a show, maybe some live Q&A, that sort of thing. 55% said yes, and 46% said no. And there were a couple of comments about why people said no, and it was mostly to do with geographic locations, right? So people listening from various parts of the world and it not being a good time for them and stuff like that. But it's always interested me doing a live episode. We'd obviously record it and publish it through the normal channels so people wouldn't miss out. You wouldn't have to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning to listen to us or anything like that. And we could do a couple of different ones. We could record in the morning for one part of the world and record in the evening another show or a different live episode for a different part of the world. So we got geographic coverage and everybody could participate if they wanted to. So that's something that was interesting. It was about 50-50, 55 to 46. But most of the no's, I think, were based on, I don't want to get up at 2 o'clock in the morning to listen to you rabbit on. Yeah.
I wouldn't either. I wouldn't want to do that either. And on the converse side of that, the inverse side of that, I also don't want to get up at 2 in the morning to record a show for people to listen to it at 2 in the afternoon on their time. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's that sentiment goes both ways. But I mean, yeah, we could definitely figure out a couple different ways. My fear, I'm interested in doing this. I guess I really would wonder how we would logistically pull this off. Like, would it be a normal show for us, but we take questions? What if people show up with no questions? Then do we just are babbling on for an hour and then it's not a very interesting live show? I guess what we could do is maybe do like have a specific topic and let people, you know,
absolutely,
ask questions,
yeah,
about that specific topic. But we have a plan on going through and we just let, you know, people's questions kind of interrupt us. So
yeah, for sure. For sure.
So
those were the main questions, yeah?
Yeah, those are the main questions that we asked. So most people, we appreciate all those responses. Then the next bit that we wanted to kind of cover for a few minutes here was about some of the freeform comments that people left and what they were asking for. So we asked everyone, you know, what do you want to see more of? And also, and that was kind of also a place for freeform comments. And what we saw was a significant amount of requests for developer stuff. So more topics around developer topics around Office 365, more developer stuff for Microsoft Azure. But then some stuff that you and I have kind of talked a little bit more about in the last few months. And there were a lot of requests for microservices, for DevOps, for containers, both Docker containers, both for Linux and Windows. There was a lot of requests for that. A couple questions around SharePoint development stuff as well. But it was really a lot of cloudy, Microsoft cloudy kind of developer stuff. So this is stuff, I know we've gotten a few specific requests from people submitting questions in to the podcast on our website, asking for us to talk more about, you know, building a microservice-based application and what kinds of things do you have to think about and why is it something you should even consider? And people who are not used to doing this, what would it look like? And so I think that would be interesting to talk about, maybe do a couple shows on that. But that was the big piece that people were asking for. We also had a request for Azure and Office 365 for the federal government space.
Yes.
That would be really interesting.
Yeah, and that's not something we've talked a little bit about news in that regard, about the Azure government cloud stuff and Office 365 government cloud stuff, but we haven't really deep dived into what's available and where and to whom and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, it's something we could certainly talk about more and maybe even get somebody on the show to come in and who's worked on it and implemented or rolled it out at an organization or something like that and have them talk through it.
Yeah. Yeah. I would like to find that. There was one, I know I listened to a podcast recently that talked about the federal space for Microsoft Azure and how federal customers can use Microsoft Azure and the specific data centers that have been earmarked for that. It was eye-opening to me. So I'd like to see if we can go back maybe maybe get that same person or maybe we get somebody else to come and talk to us about it. But I know you spent a little bit of time around that with 365 when you were at Microsoft too. So.
Yep. Yeah, no, it's a big, it's certainly a big differentiator for Microsoft as well. So it's definitely an important topic.
Another thing that we got asked for, we've talked about doing this. We got to figure out how we're going to do this, but really people asking about what the competitive landscape looks like. So maybe you're aware of Microsoft Azure, and we cover some of the news around AWS, Amazon Web Services, or the Google Cloud Platform, GCP.
Yep.
But we don't, people are asking a little bit for like a feature comparison stuff. And I think that in the shows that I've listened to where they've tried to do this, I've listened to multiple shows that try to take like, here's what we have in Azure, and here's what AWS has comparing it to Azure, and then here's what GCP has comparing it to Azure. And I find those shows get incredibly boring and incredibly long in the tooth. And it's stuff that's more like a research paper than it is a real episode. So
yeah,
I think that maybe what we might want to, we could do there is we could talk a little bit about like maybe find a topic and do like half a show on like, say, storage and what storage options does AWS have? What storage options does Azure and storage options does GCP have? And draw some comparisons and some compare and contrast those. It's tough though, because they're not always apples to apples. And some of them have offerings that don't really map to one of the other public clouds. So
yeah. Yeah. It's always hard when you compare one thing to another, because often one will have strengths and weaknesses and the other one will have strengths and weaknesses. And so you'd often just use them for different purposes based on those.
Yeah.
Another one that we had was about solving real business scenarios. So I had some feedback about saying, hey, well, why don't you tackle scenarios that you faced and talk through them about how you've solved them with what technology and bits and bobs. And we try to do a little bit of that with the conversations we've had around Docker and what I'm doing at Hyperfish and what, you know, the projects that you're up to and how we're using these different technologies and things. But this was, I think, get specific about some real-world business scenarios and how to solve them. And this one's a tough one because we only work on certain projects, right? But our listeners have all got all sorts of different things that they work on. And so, you know, maybe one way to solve this is to have our listeners email in some example scenarios that they're facing and that we could discuss them on the show, potentially get them on the show to talk through their scenario and discuss it a little bit more detail with everybody and talk about some ideas on how we might approach it and things like that. It's always hard to do these things justice, right? Because it's easy to say, oh yeah, I'd use XYZ to solve that. But without knowing all the details and all the requirements and all of the things that go into making the decision, it's hard to hit the nail directly on the head. But we can certainly give it a crack.
Yeah, and I agree with what you said there. I'd like to add too that I think that what I don't want to do, this was actually specifically requested by a few different listeners in their responses, that they were saying, you know, coming up with some scenarios and then you and CJ come up with your solution for what this would be. I don't want to come up with our contrived scenarios and say, well, under these scenarios, here's what I would go about building. We can all like do pie in the sky sketching and stuff, that kind of stuff. That's not something that I think is really interesting to people, because it's all makeup stuff. I mean, let's get real with it. Let's find, you know, as you said, I would love to have someone record, you know, turn on your mic on your laptop and record a quick little wave or an MP3 file and submit it through the website. If you just go to MicrosoftCloudShow.com/questions, you'll see where you can submit a question and an attachment to us. And we can play your question on the air, and then CJ and I can kind of just talk a little bit about, you know, what would it be like to go through and to build this application. I don't want it to turn into, I want to make sure that we're clear that what we're not trying to do is to build a free consulting kind of a thing here, where you say, well, I'm building my project and we're going to spend all this time researching and all that stuff. It's going to be more just like, you know, our thoughts around doing this. You could do this, you could do this, different options like that.
Absolutely.
So the last question we got, the last response that we got, and kind of grouped this up into a bunch of them. This was flattering. This was very flattering. We really appreciate this. And I was honest, I was very surprised by the number of people who actually said this. But people were asking how they can help with the show. How can they contribute? And things that were brought up, you know, how can they get the word out? How can they, you know, give us money to help with the show or something like that? Let me just throw a few things out there and let me share with you what our thinking is on this. And CJ, you jump in and throw in your thoughts too. But CJ and I first of all, we're not doing this to try and make a bunch of money here. We're not trying to do this as a revenue center or something. This is primarily a podcast. We're not doing it as a for-profit enterprise or anything like that. But I mean, there are expenses that go along with it. And for the most part, that's come out of our pockets. We do have one sponsor. I'm sure if you're listening to this, you heard about our great sponsor, Valid.nl, who sponsors the show. Their sponsorship has enabled us to do a bunch of stuff and to offset a lot of our costs, which is a big piece. And we do want to get more sponsors on the show. So first of all, I would say the first thing you could do to help is to get the word out. I mean, let your friends know about the show. Talk about it on Twitter. Talk about it on Facebook. Link to us on Facebook and on Twitter, on LinkedIn as well. I mean, anywhere that you can mention us, we definitely would appreciate it. The other part, though, is that one thing you may have noticed with CJ and I is that what we've been working on over the last few months of the show is that we've done some things to make the show more presentable to sponsors. This is the reason why we started a listener survey. We wanted to be able to tell our potential sponsors more about our listeners and what they would be getting from being able to reach out and have a touch point with our sponsors. This is not going to turn into a show that's going to be littered with, like, when you go to some of those websites and they're littered with Google AdWords banners all over. We just want a few spots that you'd have on the show that people want to get the word out of what they're working or their product is. So another way of giving us a hand then is that if you work for a company and you think that they would be interested in doing something like this, then reach out to us and connect us with those people at your company. We have a spec sheet or whatever you want to call it, prospectus, that explains the breakdown and, you know, where our listeners are in terms of geography and the demographic breakdown on how they identify themselves. And a couple of other things about the show that I think that would definitely help those people with, along with rates and what we would charge for and everything. So if that's something that you'd be interested in giving us a hand with, put us in touch with somebody at your company. The last one that people brought up, a couple of people brought this up, is they mentioned something called Patreon. And what Patreon is it's a way for, we could create a Patreon account for the podcast, and then people could contribute through PayPal a monthly stipend or whatever you want to say. We just a monthly deposit that you would essentially give us 2, 5, 10, 5,000. Okay, maybe not 5,000, but you have a way to go through and actually give us money for the show like once a month, and it would just come straight out of your PayPal account and straight over to us. That would help pay for the account. I've done that with one or two other podcasts. I found it interesting that some of our listeners brought that up before we brought it up. So we may give that a shot, but that's not the real way that we're trying to go through and to fund the show. Anything that you would do there would be definitely appreciated. But if we do that and we stand it up, we'll definitely let you know through the mailing list and also through on the show as well. But we definitely do appreciate people reaching out and asking how can they help with the show.
Yeah, it's a tough topic to talk about, right? Because we don't want to be too overt about it. We don't want to push people to give us money to continue the show. But obviously, we want to just cover our costs and make the show even better than it is, right? But it was very flattering that people want to step up and help. I thought I was blown away by that.
I was too. I was very surprised that people did that. But
very nice.
Yep. So that's those are our listener. I also thought it was kind of funny. We got a number of people who said they love the geek outs that we did with, like, say, Node and with NASA and SpaceX stuff. I thought those were really cool. People actually, a bunch of people actually asked for more space episodes, which was that's music to my ears.
Hey, maybe another podcast.
There we go.
we'll be able to spin up an entire podcast just about spaceflight. That'll be awesome.
Hey, I looked at the competitive landscape in that area, and there's would not be hard to jump out there and make an impression. So
giving it away, dude.
I know.
This is being recorded.
Oh, shit.
I'm kidding. Just kidding.
I forgot.
No, it was great to see some of the verbatim feedback as well, some of the comments and what people really liked about it. Just the fact that people took the time to send us feedback, and more often than not, very positive feedback too, about even if it was one or two words, just about keep it up or great show and things like that. It's nice to get that. You know, last week I was having a meeting and somebody brought up on Instant Messenger with me, and they said, are you CJ from the podcast? Do you have a podcast? it was very nice. And that they noticed, I guess. Yeah, I was like, yep, I'm the one with the weird accent. Yep.
I wonder how many Kiwis they've asked that question to.
Hopefully more than one. That would be pretty funny.
You all sound alike.
Exactly.
I'm kidding.
we all sound very weird and hard to understand. But, you know, it makes people listen harder. So
there you go.
I think, yeah, they maybe they got to listen harder to understand what I'm saying, and maybe it sinks in a bit more. I don't know. Anyway. Now, so apart from the verbatim feedback, was there anything else that sort of stood out for you, AC, in this survey?
No, I guess the big thing was I was very surprised and pleasantly surprised at the number of people who responded specifically around the freeform comments. I really do appreciate that.
Yeah.
Again, we'll do this again in the future to get an idea of, you know, what people are thinking, where they are. We're 141 episodes into this. I've never really, I don't know if I expected that we would get this far, or we would kind of just peter out of getting tired of talking about cloud stuff and if it was going to keep going on. But man, we're pushing close to 3 years now coming up in October. So this is, this is almost surprising. You think about that, 3 years of doing this.
Good Lord. I'm glad we decided to focus on the cloud because it's always changing. Imagine if we were trying to do this with a traditional 3 year release cycle for Office and SharePoint. I think by the end of year, like two out of that cycle, before it started getting interesting with a new release coming up in the next 12 months, things would have got pretty boring.
I agree. You know, it's funny you say that because there was some news that came out about SharePoint this week that we totally forgot to mention at the beginning of the show.
Yes, there was. So, do you want to talk about it, or shall I break the bad news to the listeners?
Well, it's not
bad news. It's actually good news.
It's not even really. Is it news?
It's not news. Well, yeah. Hopefully it's not news.
Yeah, exactly. So back in 2014, January of 2014, Microsoft posted something on their on MSDN that talked a little bit about sandbox solutions and how sandbox solutions were the code part, the managed code part of sandbox solutions was deprecated. And Microsoft simply said, you were involved in this. So you tell me if, I guess you weren't involved in this. Well, you kind of were. You were there when all this was going on. So Microsoft said that and that with the code part of sandbox solutions, it was deprecated. And at some point in the future, they alluded to the fact that at some point in the future, they would be turned off.
Yes.
And what the news was this week was that it was kind of a bombshell that was dropped out of the blue that just said, in 30 days, we're shutting it off. And any sandbox solutions that have custom code in them are going to get shut off as well.
Yeah.
And I think what really took people back, there were a few pieces of this that really took people back. Number one, hey, 30 days, even though they said something in January of 2014 that we're, you know, almost 3 years past that date, at least two and a half years past that date, all of a sudden with a 30-day notice, it was pretty short for people to react to it. And granted, you've known about it for a while, but still, it was pretty short to be able to react to it. That was one that took people back. But the other part that kind of took people back was that inside of SharePoint Online today in Office 365. Now, again, this is just 365. This has nothing to do with SharePoint on-prem. But they said that the activate button for Sandbox Solutions had been disabled and that you couldn't go through and activate Sandbox Solutions that had code in them. And that triggered a bunch of support requests, and that the support teams at Microsoft apparently didn't realize that. And so they were logging it as a bug and it was affecting certain people. And for a while, this showed up as a bug in SharePoint, even though it was a policy decision, but it looked like the support teams weren't made aware of the fact that this was deliberate. It was something that was done. So
yeah, left hand, right hand. That's, I think that the general consensus is not that it's being switched off, but that it was poorly communicated. And there really wasn't a lot of discussion since that January 2014 blog post about the deprecation. There wasn't a good reminder. There wasn't a good reminder post, you know, sort of 9 months out, 6 months out, 3 months out, and then sort of 30, 60, 90 days out about it going away. And that, I think, is where the real complaints are. But hey, the news is out now, and it spread like wildfire around the community with all the people having a good moan about how it was being handled. So the news spread pretty quick when that happened. So I hope people aren't building sandbox solutions with code. But, you know, sometimes it's not always up to them, right? They've got vendors that are doing it, or they've bought something that does it. I think 30 days is a poor choice on Microsoft's part. It reeks of being forced to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And 30 days is not enough. It's not realistic, and it's not reasonable in my view. And I doubt people at Microsoft think it's reasonable either. So, yeah, I don't know what to say here. I think there's probably more at play.
Yeah, but I think when I saw this, it doesn't affect me. It doesn't affect me or the stuff that I've worked on with customers. I haven't used custom code in a sandbox solution in a very long time from when they first came out. You saw that news in 2014, and it was just one day they have a pretty good chance of being shut off, and we'll just have to wait.
Yeah.
Part of it looked at it, though, is also as a customer of Azure, and the emails that I get about services being transitioned or shut down or whatever, they're almost always like 9 months or 6 months or 12-month kind of notice that's coming up. I mean, if you've done anything with Azure AD, you're getting those emails right now about your certificates that are going to be, that you need to make sure that you do the rolling certificates and everything, because they're all going to expire.
Yeah. That's why I think there's more to the story than meets the eye.
Yeah. But the other part of it, though, too, is the thing that concerns me about it. And we kind of touched a little bit of this on the last show, which is the Office team has a poor track record of really finishing something off. And instead, they seem to kind of do some stuff and then they transition to the other one. Instead of kind of improving and innovating, they seem to build, make it to a certain level, and then the team gets disbanded, or they, not in a negative way, the team just changes, breaks up and goes to different
priorities. Else.
Yeah, and go build something else. And then nobody owns the old thing, and so it just kind of sits there, and then those same people go build something new. Hence, we have now 4 dev models.
Yeah.
I don't think this kind of shows that, you know, yet again, that it's, if you really want to go build with this new SharePoint framework that's coming out, you know, any day now from Microsoft, that's supposed to be the new way of building client-side solutions in SharePoint, this has to weigh on your mind. Like, going, is out of the blue one day, I'm going to get a 30-day notice saying, nope, sorry, this doesn't work anymore.
Yeah. I mean, I know exactly what you're saying. And the cold, hard reality of it, and people at Microsoft may argue with me on this, and fair enough, but, you know, this is just an opinion. But people at Microsoft get promoted for shipping something new, not finishing something old. And that's kind of systemic. And I think some of that shows in this, right? And in full disclosure, I worked on sandbox solutions while I was in the WSS team, in the engineering team, and we had grand plans that never came to fruition for sandbox solutions. It kind of started with, but part of the problem with sandbox solutions is they had limited APIs they could use. And the first culprit in the demise of sandbox solutions was when the SharePoint portal server team, as it was back then, which was separate from the Windows SharePoint services team, two separate teams. SPS was run by Jeff Tepper, and Windows SharePoint services was run by Derek Burney. And I was in the WSS team, and we built sandbox solutions, and we shipped with some WSS APIs. And the SharePoint portal server team were supposed to come through with a whole bunch of APIs for the sandbox for SharePoint portal server, and they never did it.
Mm.
It was kind of hobbled from the very beginning because the first complaint was, I've only got these limited APIs. I can't even call like SharePoint portal server search APIs, for example, or things like that. And so it got off to a kind of a rough start. But here's something to think about. That I put two and two in my mind. Yesterday, I was writing a response to somebody on Facebook about this, was imagine a world where we could have started with sandbox solutions, and then eventually all those sandbox solution APIs that you could call were able to be remoted to a remote code process, much like we have with provider-hosted add-ins, right? So eventually sandbox solutions back-end code could have been provided much like a provider-hosted add-in over some other sort of protocol, but it was all kind of hidden away from the code, because the way sandbox solutions work is when you call an API in the sandbox, it's really using remote .NET code remoting into a different process and using CAS policies to stop calling certain APIs. So that could have been abstracted away. We could have had provider-hosted add-in that was the back-end for your sandbox solution apps. Then imagine if you could have put client-side web parts in your sandbox solutions that called that same back-end code, and voila, we've kind of got, instead of having 4 app models, we kind of just evolved from the first one or one of the first ones with sandbox solutions. And I was like, man, wouldn't the world be a better place with that? I don't know if I explained it very well, but you know what I mean?
Did.
Things could have evolved a lot better.
I take that and even taking the concept of like auto hosted, where you give it the code and it even, you want to go through and have even control over the scaling and all that and have it deployed over to Azure. Yep. And I mean, that's a, I agree with you. I mean, it's a, I like, I, yep. It would have given us one model, or I guess a second model from the feature and solution model that we had, but it still would have been using the same core concept that we have with Farm Solutions, just a way to kind of still sandbox our stuff and then move on to not have to go through the any additional models, but oh well.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, remember, Sandbox Solutions were designed in 2002 and 2003, and there was no Azure, there was no microservice architecture or anything. We had a hard time figuring out how to host and run other people's code securely. Mm. And it was hard, but that meant that there were more restrictions than people liked on them, which kind of made them less useful than they should have been. But anyway.
Oh, well.
Never mind.
All right. Want to do a couple picks?
Yes. Yes. I've got a couple. Microsoft launched a new camera app called Microsoft Pix. Which is an app, a camera application for iPhone, and it uses some sort of back-endy sort of smarts, I don't know exactly what, to help you take better photos with better level adjustments and all that sort of stuff, sort of auto-magics your photos and makes them better. So I don't know exactly what they're doing behind the scenes, but they take a bunch of photos, I think, and then pick the best one. They decide which one's the best and then do a bunch of level adjustments and things like that automagically. So that's kind of cool. Microsoft Pix, P-I-X.
Yeah, it's available for iOS.
My second one is an API called Full Contact. It's available at fullcontact.com, and they've got a developer API. This is an API for finding out more about somebody. So you can send it an email address, and it will tell you about that person on the internet. So, for example, like what their Gravatar URL is, what their LinkedIn profile address is, what their GitHub is, what their Facebook is, what their Twitter is, where they work, where they live, not live, where they're based roughly, you know, city and that sort of stuff, which is kind of cool. You can, I think you sign up, you get 500 calls a month for free, and then they've got paid plans. The reason I came across it is when somebody starts to use our trial, we want to know who they are. And so we run them through this API to sort of get a rough outline of who they might be. They just provide us their email address to run a trial. So we wanted to do some digging and find a bit more out about them and see where in the world they are and who they might be. So we use that. We use that in combination with Zapier. When somebody starts a trial, we use Zapier to do some automation behind that, and we call this API and get more information about them and update their record in our system based on it.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Huh. I remember this actually showed up in I did the whole identity theft thing when I got hacked a couple of weeks ago. And there's a bunch of, one of the things that LifeLock does is I signed up for LifeLock, and one of the things that it does is it finds all of those different sites that are out there that show you different where you can confirm someone's identity and stuff like that. I think, remember, this one showed up. So
yeah, it's kind of cool. So yeah, Microsoft Pix, Full Contact. And then the last one I've got is, if you are Canadian, please do me a favor and apply to be an astronaut. So the Canadian Space Agency, CSA, are opening applications for the next generation of space explorers. You could apply if you reside in Canada or a Canadian citizen residing abroad. You've got to have a bachelor's degree or a doctorate in a couple of different fields, a bunch of different physical requirements, obviously, but they're looking to bring on two new Canadian astronauts.
Is the qualification for that, or the confirmation of that, you have to be able to say A?
That would opt in all Kiwis, eh?
Yeah. You just did it.
Exactly. So maybe I do have a shot.
Awesome.
But yeah, so if you're Canadian, please do me a favor and apply to be an astronaut and then tweet us on the show, because I need to live vicariously through you.
There you go. Absolutely. We want to hear that. We will start a podcast just of your trials and tribulations going through astronaut training and qualification.
Yeah. Exactly.
Cool. Good list, man.
Yeah. How about you?
I have two. I have a curated list of AWS resources to prepare for AWS certifications. So there are five different AWS certifications. And this is a list that's actually a gist up on GitHub that includes open source repos, blogs, blog posts, ebooks, PDFs, white papers, video courses, free lectures, slides, sample tests, and many other resources. in a bunch of different categories here, but it's for the five different AWS exams. One is the Solutions Architect, one is the Associate Exam, one is the Solutions Architect Professional Exam, one is the SysOps Administrator Cert, and one is the the DevOps Engineer Cert, and then the AWS Developer Certification. So some of those are TBD and getting built up, but it's a giant list that they've already started building up of all of these different resources that showed up on Hacker News the other day, and I thought it was pretty cool.
Very cool.
Another one here is another GitHub resource. It's a repo that a guy has started. CJ Barber, it looks like his name, but it's called Hacker News Tools of the Trade, the 2015 edition, which essentially what this does is that this is a guy has gone through and collected a ton of data from Hacker News, AngelList, Quora, and he made the 2015 version of this. Now, this is something where you can keep going in and making changes to it. So you can actually, you can fork it, create a clone of this, make some changes, submit your own ideas and stuff and put it in there. And what this is, you'll find things around all these different resources around identity verification, browser email testing, issue tracking, project management, app developer tools, user testing, payroll. I mean, you name it, database, data warehousing, accounting, invoicing, designers, user feedback, shipping. It's just it's a massive list of all these different things that are out there that you can go take a look at. So it's pretty cool.
Very cool.
Yeah. Good for resources.
I definitely want to take a look through that.
Yeah. So we'll have our picks up in our show notes, and we'll also have the little news bites that we've also mentioned. We'll have those up in the show notes as well.
Yeah, excellent.
Awesome. CJ, another good show. Do you have anything you want to add before we cut the mics?
No, I'm heading off to New Zealand next week, so we're going to try and record from there while I'm down in the South Pacific. So, I may sound a little funny, you know, upside down and back to front and all that sort of stuff, but we'll give it a shot. I'm heading down for the Digital Workplace Conference in Auckland for a couple of days next week and presenting one session on Microsoft Graph and APIs and Office 365 for developers, and another on Docker and Node and sort of the whole world of those tools and how to build apps using them. So I'm looking forward to that.
Awesome. Interviewing any sheep while you're there?
Probably, yeah. I'll give it a shot. Yeah.
Just messing with you. Awesome, man.
Yeah, I'm interviewing Barbara. Yeah.
Nice. Very nice.
See what I did there? Anyway.
Awesome.
Yep.
All right, man.
Excellent. Well, thanks for the show.
Absolutely. And I will talk to you when you are on the other side of the world.
Excellent.
All right, man.
Have a good one.
Bye. Did you like this episode? Send us a tweet about it and drop us a 5-star review in iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show. We'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a wave or an MP3 and provide a link so that we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is an excerpt from Evaporated Air by Monk Turner, used under Creative Commons. You can subscribe to us in iTunes and the Google Play Store by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook, searching for Microsoft Cloud Show, or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up to our mailing list by heading to our website and entering your email to interact with us, participate in upcoming interviews, and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.